The opinions expressed on End Time are not necessarily the opinions of Impro Mafia. So if you have a problem, email Dan and he'll apologize for whatever it was that Greg said.
Impro Mafia presents End Time! Hello and welcome to the End Time Birthday Edition.
It's the birthday edition!
Tonight we're celebrating both Christmas and the 5-year anniversary of Impro Mafia. So, to celebrate,
yes,
I've organized three people who weren't actually around at the birth of Impro Mafia to be on the show.
I was there pre-birth and then I was there 3 years later.
Incubation?
I was there in the... I think everyone's red-hot hate for me led to the fiery birth of Impro Mafia.
Indeed. You were the old and withered phoenix.
I got blamed.
I got blamed
somehow. Everyone was like, Greg, you should do exciting things and change the world. I'm like, I'm a caretaker for someone else's show. And they're like, no, we want to change the world. Like, okay, go and do it. Yeah, we will. Okay, enjoy that and have fun. And you did.
Oh, yeah. I did. I was on the outskirts too when Impro Mafia started up because I was constantly out of town.
You were in Townsville.
I was in Gladstone riding robots over a bauxite.
Don't call it Gladstone.
Don't call it Gladstone.
No.
I was in Gladstone.
Supposedly that's wrong. I found out tonight. I've never known this.
Yeah. Gladstone.
I went. Oh yes. Yeah, so people from Gladstone went on a tour and it went. No, it's Gladstone. Gladstone, Greg. It's Gladstone.
I'm going up to the Rockhamptons.
I like that. Adds a level of class.
Yeah.
To rip off some brass bull balls.
Brass ball bowl.
So what are we talking about? 5 years.
Well, tonight, with you, I figured we'd talk about the last year.
Okay.
It would be foolish to talk about the first 2 years of Impro Mafia with
you.
Yes, when you were sitting alone at home putting together a compendium of Dungeons & Dragons knowledge.
That was before that, and it was Slay Industries.
Mm, and that doesn't make it any more valid.
What I remember from that period, the start of Impro Mafia, was Natalie would come back from shows and go, let me tell you about what I'm doing. And I'd go, let me tell you, I'm not interested. And she'd go, oh, and I literally knew nothing. Like when I saw the photos tonight, the slideshow, I had no idea. I watched that and went, I don't know who these people are. I don't know what
you didn't recognize the original shirt.
No, I'd never seen the Impro Mafia shirt, the original Japanese, kanji characters, whatever it is. Never seen it. I didn't know it existed. I'd managed to somehow totally miss the first 3 years.
I helped Wade design that shirt.
I'm sorry.
And then I sent it away. And then between me leaving my site and being printed, kanji characters appeared on the shirt.
Oh, I wonder who did that.
Yeah, I wonder who did that.
Yes.
Captain Japan is awesome.
All right, so we're talking about the last 2 years, the last year?
Probably the last year, because it's been a very successful year, and you've been a fairly integral part in some of the success of that.
Some of it, yes. I think, honestly, the most of the kudos should go to Natalie and Wade, because they got the Brisbane Arts Theatre.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I'm part of the Brisbane Arts Theatre. I'm on the board of Brisbane Arts Theatre now as well. But that was...
You're our mole.
Yes. And well, not even a secret mole. Like, everyone at the Brisbane Arts Theatre goes, so what's Impro Mafia doing? You should do stuff. Okay.
It's a bit weird. Make us money.
Yes, pretty much. Yes, so they deserve all that sort of praise of getting the venue and convincing the venue to give it to us for free, which is, well, you know, as a cut of the door instead of being, I don't know, should we talk secret financial business? I don't know. The only thing I really had to do at the start was I had a lot of time to put together Prognosis Death.
Right.
So Prognosis Death got put together by me. I wouldn't say I invented Prognosis Death.
You invented cop doctors.
Cop doctors. That's not cock doctors. That's cop doctors. And if you say it quickly, it sounds very rude. Cop Doctors was basically Prognosis Death, if you've seen it, with cops. Basically, they were cops and they were doctors.
Yeah.
And people went, do we really need cops? That's what it came down to. I think my guy's name was, I think it was like Bruce Magnum. Detective Dr. Bruce Magnum. That's the guy who became Burton Mangold. That was that was obviously Dave's name, but that character, that style of character, the beautiful leading man, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all these ideas, these tropes that I was going to follow. And it got pointed out when I brought you guys into it, Dan and a few other people, into the show. Do we need cops? Does cops actually add anything? Really, there's a rich vein of excitingness to mine in doctors.
I feel like that decision had already been made by the time I showed up on the scene.
Oh, okay.
I was under the impression that very early on, someone found a very excited Greg Robotham going, cop doctors, and just went, settle. Doctors.
Doctors. Fair enough. I think the first rehearsal we did kind of cemented it. Yeah. The first rehearsal we did didn't really work. It was actually, if you put that show on stage, it would have been bloody awful.
Balls up.
It was awful because no one knew what they were doing.
Have we ever had a first rehearsal that would have been in any way enjoyable to watch?
No, not at all. Never. And that's why we have rehearsals now. That's why we have to have 2 to 3. It's the rule. If you want to put a show on an Impro Mafia and you get your show in, you will do 2 to 3 rehearsals. Minimum. That's it. It's the way it works nowadays. Which, and rightly so. We've learnt this lesson very, very hard. Was that going into Prognosis Death? We've talked about it a million times. Sick of it. But the important
thing... But you've never talked about it on the podcast.
Haven't I? Oh, there you go. I'm surprised. Okay. What do you want to know?
Well, you're the narrator.
Yes, voice of God.
You're the God behind
Gavcor. Love you, Gavcor. Gavcor said, call me voice of God. And I like that. I prefer that to narrator. You know, I don't know why. It's
And this was probably Impro Mafia's first narrated show, too.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
That was something that I feel I did add to the show. That was something I desperately wanted to do. Mm. I didn't put myself in the show.
Not only was it useful to the show, but it's been useful to every other show. Like, every other show has had a narrator since then, I think, almost.
To one form or another, yes.
Of a sort.
Yes.
Maybe not Agatha Holmes.
Well, that was technically... Yes, you did. That was Dave's character.
Oh, yes, that was Dave's character, yeah.
Wastings was the... No, just on
so
stage.
Being able to set a scene in a long form stops so much confusion. The biggest problem with a long form show is that it can get off the rails and it stays off the rails.
Indeed. And it collapses. You can go to dizzying heights, but dizzying depths are also your area of play as well.
Oh yeah.
What we've learned to do, and Prognosis Death, it was a total mistake. It wasn't planned. I wouldn't say I planned this. What we've learned to do, I think, at the Art Theatre shows, and what makes it different to other things we put on and other things I've seen in Brisbane and elsewhere, and I mean elsewhere as in the world, like traveled the world, seen Impro in lots of different places. What we've started to do here is we've said we're in a theatre. Let's treat it like a theatrical performance. Theatre is very rarely improvised. Theatre is normally written down or it's set out. And what we're doing is, yes, we are improvising, but it's not pure Impro in any way, shape. Well, not any way, shape. Well, it's pure Impro. No, wait. It's not pure Impro. It's about 70% improvised. It's about 30% non-improvised. As in, we have set characters with set names, with set backstories that build over season to season.
Yep.
And we don't get rid of those. We pick and choose what we want to.
I mean, with something like Prognosis Death, do we really have set backstories? Like, those sort of developed almost, didn't they?
Yes, that's what I mean. Sorry, yes, in the series themselves.
Yeah.
We had some basic ideas of where, you know, like we always knew that Lestrange wanted to be with Buble, and there was...
That was something that I decided by myself. So far as my relationship between the main characters. I didn't tell anyone about it, and it was like, I think episode 4 or something, where possibly you came up to me and went, your character's in love with that character, isn't
he? There you go. Okay, although I'm taking too much credit then. That's fair enough. I like doing that.
Fuck you.
So what we're trying to do is, we're trying to create a structure. And for me, when I thought about, not that I planned it this way, but when I realized what we were doing, the closest I could think I'd seen in the world, we went to Amsterdam and saw Boom Chicago, who are Americans, and they do Impro in Amsterdam in English for tourists. Everyone in Amsterdam pretty much speaks English anyway, so I can speak English.
Yep.
And they do lots of structured stuff. It's all short form, but it's all very structured. And you realize when you come back and see it once or twice, which we did, you see the same show over and over again. They have a structure they follow very, very carefully. And though it looks very spontaneous, it's not actually spontaneous. It's a lot of structure involved. So I think we've taken a bit of that and we've said, okay, we need a structure. If we have a structure, we're not going to crash and burn as often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where not just Prog Death, but Agatha Holmes, One Bride for Seven Brothers, All Together Now, Touched by a Hammer, all our shows that we've done have that idea of structure.
Yep.
Strong foundations.
Yep.
And that's what's made them work.
Genre of entertainment, too. Like, any genre bases itself on a structure of the genre.
Yes, of course. That's exactly right. And people forgive a lot of it. I have actually had people say to me, oh, but it wasn't improvised. Or, but you didn't fully improvise that. And to begin with, I was very defensive. I go, oh, no, it definitely was. Oh, very improvised. And then you go, no, okay. I knew that your character's name was Ludwig Lestrange. He was Burton Mangold. She was Nurse Lottie Buble. So? It didn't make your relationships non-improvised. You didn't know you're going to be fighting a mummy in this show. Mm. You didn't know what was going on. It's all improvised. It just means we didn't have to spend 25 minutes going, I'm Dr. Zubab Zingleberry, the happy doctor from over there. And everyone goes, who's that? What the hell is that name? Mm. I think
the fact that it's the same characters each show has made people bond with the characters too, I think.
Yes.
Hedger's nodding for the audience at home.
Nod for the camera. She's not
beautiful. Beautiful job.
we'll put that into the podcast notes.
And we're good. Nodding.
Yes, we've been lucky. I think it was a lot of luck, but it was luck tempered after. Well, I think, what did I say? Fortune favors a prepared mind. So we were prepared.
Did you learn that from Die Hard 2 as well?
No.
That's where I learned it.
What an odd thing to say.
That's where I learned the phrase. The bad guy in Die Hard 2 finds, like, he needs this CD that to activate the laser satellite or something, and Casey Ryback steals the CD and then gets shot and drops the CD on the ground while the train rushes by, and the train pulls up, and the bad guy gets out of the train and finds the CD. And it's the most retarded moment of ridiculous coincidence.
Yes.
But he glosses through it and goes, where someone goes, wow, that was lucky. And he goes, chance favors the prepared mind. And then everything's okay from that point on.
I must admit, I don't take a lot of my life lessons from Die Hard 2. Maybe I should.
Hang on. Wait. Under Siege 2. Apologies to anyone at home screaming. Under Siege 2. Casey Ryback, played by Steven Seagal, was in Under Siege 2. Bruce Willis,
yes,
in Die Hard.
That's true. Yes, you've nutted the core of the problem. No, I don't know where I picked it up from. I probably read it in a book. You know, being the crazy old man that I am, I read it in a book. Not even like an electronic book, like an actual paper book made from dead trees. Scary.
Made from ground up Kindles, turned into a paste and then dried out.
Oh, that'll be the future. A dark, dark future.
What else has happened this year? I mean, this has been a huge year for Impromar. Yeah.
Every...
It started off with Prognosis Death.
Prognosis,
was like a last minute decision when there was a spot at the theatre they couldn't fill, and suddenly we were doing a run of shows.
Yes, which we'd never done. That's right.
Yeah. And it was massively successful.
Mm.
And then all year we've been doing long form shows that have all been really successful.
Mm. We did some nice work. When we first got the Arts Theatre late last year, we did some short form shows, quite a few short form shows.
We did a lot of short form shows last year,
yes.
And half of them were like pants.
And I agree. I wouldn't say that. Yeah, I'd say half's fair. I think half's fair. And we tried hard in the space. We didn't know how to use that space. We worked out how to use that space. It's a theatre. Make theatre shows. Theatrical events, which is the important thing. I mean, recently, One Bride for Seven Brothers, Michael created...
A slideshow type of thing.
Yes. What do you call them?
An
credits.
Intro.
Credits. Was it credits? Yes. Yeah. And made it look like an oldie time movie. And people roared when the Impro Mafia... I was up in the balcony watching... And when the Impro Mafia symbol came up, like Impro Mafia presents, the 94 people we had, 96 people, which is great for us, roared. Like they went off their tits just to seeing Impro Mafia presents. And I went, oh my God, we've hit something here. Not One Bride for Seven Brothers, though that was very successful. It's the brand and the fact that people like the theatrical nature of what we're doing.
Yeah.
They enjoy the fact you're going to get a theater show. You pay your $10, which is ridiculously low.
Yes.
I mean, really, for the amount of friggin' effort we put into it, it's like, good
Although
God.
Although we don't rehearse anything.
Three times.
We do like rehearsals though, don't we?
Yes, we do.
No, we do put a lot of work into these shows,
and the director especially puts a lot of work into it. I mean, the director and the music director and all these. Oh, God damn, the amount of effort it gets put into it. It's not. We don't just throw some shit together anymore. It's not allowed anymore. It's not.
Yeah.
In fact, the artistic director has a habit of he was in a lot of them. Natalie has a habit of turning up and being a part of it and watching it and going, oh, what's going on? Like, hang on, what are you doing? Or how can I make this better? Or how can I fix it? We've quality control is our watchword at the moment. Actually, watchwords maybe. Quality and control.
Yeah. It may be hyphenated.
Yes, thank you. That'll make it well. It's
which I remember was the way that you got out of a when you did two words in a word at a time story once. Hyphenated. Well, that's not a hyphenated word.
But his massive, sexy charm got him through. The thing I heard tonight, an odd compliment / gauntlet thrown down.
A compliment.
thrown down by Michael Griffin. He said, Impro Mafia is a little bit drunk with power at the moment. And I went, really? I took it a bit, I'm sorry. I don't want to be drunk with power. And he said, no, we're just saying strange things. We're just saying these amazing things. Anyone else who sort of said these things, you just go, get your hand off it. Yep. But Impro Mafia has proved we can do these sort of things. In 2009, we just did some weird things that paid off again and again. So now everyone's going, oh, we've done X, Y, and Z. So now we have to do X, Y, and Z squared. And everyone's kind of throwing it a lot higher. And I think that means we'll in 2010 hit some amazing heights. We also crash and burn.
So we're going to be exponentially disappointing, is what you're saying.
We could be. Look, I'm really pleased with the company looking forward and looking up. Actually going, oh, we've tried this. This seems to be working. Mm-hmm. Our audience likes what we're doing. I'm talking mainly the Arts Theatre here.
Yep.
I'm not putting down Speakeasy. I'm not putting down Albion at all. But I'm talking mainly the Arts Theatre here.
Well, the Albion's quite interesting because that's a different kettle of fish. I mean, we've done Brisbane Arts Theatre for 2 years, but the first year we did short form, and this year we've done almost all long form.
Yes,
but at the same time we lost our rookie show at O'Malley's.
Yes.
And then picked up. Oh, and we were doing Grudge Match. We did three shows of Grudge Match at the beginning.
Stage Door Dinner Theatre, yes.
And then we got the offer to play at the Albion Comedy Club, like the secret show.
That's right. I forgot about that. We shut down Stage Door.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. We were already shutting down Stage Door. Stage Door had about 6 weeks to go maximum. We just called it down quicker.
We had six shows to prove to ourselves that we could increase the audience and make it work.
Yes.
And the guys at the Stage Door loved us and they wanted us around forever.
Yes.
But it wasn't working for us and it would be offensive. It would be rude to them to keep trying something that wasn't working.
Yes. And we could have... I think that venue is a good venue. We could have made something work there. We just didn't know what to do there.
Mm, that show was not working there, though.
No. Grudge Match Comedy Football was a very... We tried hard. I don't think it was a very strong show.
It was my very favourite venue to play at, though.
Oh, was it really?
Okay. Just because it was a venue which was like intimate and fun, and all the audience were kinos, and I got to play silly buggers and make rude jokes, and everyone loved it.
It was a short form show. Yeah. I think it works better at the Albion because there's a bigger audience. You need a big audience to make that run.
That's true, but they're not all my friends, and they're not all laughing at my stupid jokes. I have to work at the Albion. It's fucked.
Indeed, yes.
I've got to start remembering how to play improv, probably.
Yeah, we have to get used to that. That's very true. Albion needs work. We need to work Albion out and work the kinks out, but we're a lot more confident nowadays, and Speakeasy as well. I mean, Speakeasy's been a joy, absolute joy.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, I don't think anyone's got a bad thing to say about Speakeasy.
Yeah, it's awesome fun.
People have... Or maybe we could try something different, which is good, but no one says bad things about it. Albion needs to have the kinks worked out of it. That doesn't mean it's wrong. It just, something's not quite right yet about
it. We need to mesh.
Yes. I think we need to be confident. We're confident at the Arts Theatre now. We step on stage. Yep. We pull crazy shit out of our asses, and then we make it work.
Yep.
But at Albion, we don't seem to be quite as confident yet. So once we get the confidence, then people will go, oh my God, they're great. And
yeah.
But that's our bread and butter, so...
Indeed. Delicious bread, delicious butter.
We can't let it go. And I don't want to let it go.
No.
Keep forcing everyone to play. And play well. Play better.
So saith Greg Robotham. Well, thank you very much for piping up for our big Christmas show tonight, Greg. We'll
that's
have to
right.
get you back soon for a whole episode of
Ha!
End Time. But until that, we might pause this and then see if we can grab Nat.
Good night, world!
We're started.
All right.
We're on. We're back. We're back with possibly the second prettiest member of Impro Mafia after David Massingham. It's Natalie Bohensky.
We try hard.
But we just can't catch the pretty young thing.
No. We stab it with our steely knives, but we just can't kill the beast.
I thought we would have a run through all of our amazing Brisbane Arts Theatre shows that have happened this year.
Amazing.
And have a bit of a wrap-up of them.
Sure.
And I'm glad to get you on board because you were pretty much the driving force for getting Impro Mafia in the Brisbane Arts Theatre, from as is my understanding.
I helped.
Who did you help?
Wait. Greg and I had wanted to do impro shows at the Arts Theatre going back some years, but there was a certain administrative director at the time who was saying that it wasn't that worth their while and we'd have to pay and it would cost $1,000 a night and all these things. And our idea that, well, that's, you know, it's what it costs. And
Jiminy.
So, yeah, or something like that. Anyway, far more than we could ever pay. So that put paid to our ambitions there at that time. And that probably would have been about 4 or 5 years ago that we inquired about that. And we wanted to do a cooperative thing, essentially, to try and bring a new people into the Arts Theatre and to give improvisers the chance to do on stage. And, of course, at that stage, it was kind of very loosely. It was sort of, I guess, early days Impro Mafia. It was more just Greg and I's idea going, oh, could we do Impro at the Arts Theatre? And it just became a hassle. that particular administrative director left, and in late 2007, the different artistic director and we just started chatting, and I raised the idea of, you know, we could do Impro, and they were looking for trying to find new audiences or a different option, and
yep,
and they took a chance on it. So we began in early 2008 with the Comedius Maximus.
And I got to wear a toga.
You did, and we did a
and
short
I looked
one.
Very gay.
You,
like,
you
I look at the photos, look, and Dan, I look very effeminate in those
It's
shots.
A skill that you have. It's because you've got very skinny legs. And you were wearing, you were wearing a short
toga.
Toga. If you've been wearing
leaving
a longer
nothing
one,
to the imagination.
Yeah, you may have looked more butch if you'd been wearing a longer one. But you're like, you're a skinny guy wearing a short skirt.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Been there, done
that. That's what it's going to look like. But yeah, so we did mostly short form at the Art
Theatre. Speaking of short skirts, can I just point out to the listening audience that Natalie is wearing a particularly nice little black dress tonight.
This is my $14 dress from Bangkok.
Flashing her gams like nobody's business.
Oh, my injured gams, my injury-ravaged gams. I completely fell down the stairs.
Indeed, fell down the stairs.
I
like
totally fell down the stairs.
It was totally awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing, but I was walking downstairs, and all of a sudden I was throwing my laptop in front of me as I fell head first down, and my knees and my shins took it. But anyway, thank you for the compliment.
I almost wet myself when you did that, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, what's she done?
See, I think it goes to show what runs through your own head. You know, for me, it was just, oh, no, everyone's just pointing and laughing at me being clumsy again, so... Like, oh, God.
I thought you had snapped a bone for sure.
No, I'm quite resilient. I think my body's used to its complete lack of grace.
Good old rubber bones Bahensky. That's what they call her.
That's it. Actually, I might be back up at 3:20 on Leichhardt on Saturday night, tomorrow night, or later tonight.
Yep.
To do some Bollywood dancing because they're having their breakup party at the same venue. So I might head back up and...
You're a motherfucker that you started learning to dance like three weeks ago and now you're performing them on stage.
I didn't learn to dance 3 weeks ago. I learned to dance as a kid. I just took up Bollywood dancing about 2 months ago and knew a girl who was doing some stuff up at the Art Theatre and said, oh, come and dance it with me. And I was like, okay.
You are horrible.
And if you see the video, I screwed up a fair bit.
See, you did such a good job that I thought that the person who was doing all the right moves was actually screwing up.
Oh, you're very kind. Yeah, no, I quite enjoy it. And I like learning routines, dance routines. And I think
I can't do it. I haven't trained my brain to memorize physical positions like that.
Yeah, I think maybe I can.
Yeah, it's a different skill.
Yeah, and I'm quite pleased with that because I remember always as a kid doing dance, learning the routines or performing a routine was the most fun.
Yeah.
You know, I always hated the technical stuff, which is probably right. So all of the plié, up, down, out, up, across, demi-plié, grand bouillon, arabesque.
Second position.
First, second, third. But going, okay, and this, and then making it a physical memory rather than, because if you watch the video of me Bollywood dancing, don't do that. But you can see me thinking and going, what comes next?
No.
And we've done that a couple more weeks now and finished it because it wasn't actually finished, that particular dance.
Uh-huh.
And now I can do it a lot, most of it without thinking.
Uh-huh.
And it's nice making physical memories to the point where Chris Anderson suggested that we do a Bollywood impro show.
Oh,
and I was
Jesus.
Like, now that's going to require a lot of work.
A lot of commitment by everyone who's not you.
Yeah. But it could be quite fun. Maybe throwing in a Bollywood scene in a short form or something.
The thing is, do any of us really like the Bollywood genre enough to commit
to a long form? Yeah, we would
have to immerse ourselves.
Someone would have to go and watch a whole lot of Bollywood films.
I did not like Jane Austen before
that
you
is
introduced
true.
It to me. And now I've bought myself Pride and Prejudice.
You have?
And Early and I are sitting down to watch the entire thing.
Wow. All 6 hours.
All 6 hours.
Beautiful. It's a great show. Like, it just
it's
is a great
star.
Show. It's really, really
good. It's surprisingly
good.
Funny. At any rate, I haven't got you in here to talk about how clever you are at Bollywood dancing.
Oh, yeah,
I have got you in to do a recap of all of the impro shows across the year.
So we start
and
this
why
year.
Why not start with, what was the first one? The
Prognosis Death?
No, oh, the very first. Oh, that's true. Prognosis. I talked with Greg about Prognosis
Death.
Oh,
you did? Okay. We don't need to
So we
then.
Could probably jump past
Skip
Prognosis
that.
Death season one.
Yeah.
And go straight to the X Games? X site? Impro X? Tom's?
Extreme? No, that was 2008.
Impro? No, no, no. That was the first this year. No. Because that was when I had my break. I wasn't in.
The first... No, no, no. The first show of this year was The Wake.
Oh, that's true.
And it was followed by All Together Now.
No, no, no. All Together Now was the...
Extreme Impro was last year.
Really?
It was 2008.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
Yeah, I'm right.
I'm going to cut all that out. So the first one of this year was The Wake.
Mm-hmm.
And I skipped out on that because I was having a sabbatical.
Yes, yes, you were.
Like the self-obsessed narcissist that I am.
You and me both, my friend. You and me both.
What was that? Was that a yawn?
Well, sorry.
It's
yes.
only 3 a.m,
well,
Nat.
I have to drink more Pepsi Max. Sorry, I'm not as hardcore as I'd like to be. I really wish I was hardcore.
Mama needs her juice.
Ugh. Mama needs some of her potions. Makes her feel good. So it was The Wake.
Yes, and then All Together Now.
Which was only long form in the second half. And then All Together Now, was there something in the middle there? Newsarama came after that, I think.
Yes.
The Wake was in March, and then April was All Together Now. Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. And then then Newsarama in May.
And Newsarama was Greg's baby that he abandoned.
Well, he had a different concept, and then when Wade, you know, changed the venue, because Greg had envisaged it as a stage door dinner theatre show. And so when Wade said, oh, no, I want to put it on at the Arts, Wade was like, oh, sorry. Greg was like, oh, okay. But he couldn't think of anything that inspired him.
Yep.
And, you know, Greg is the kind of person to go, well, I don't want to do anything substandard that I'm not inspired by. And so he asked Wade to take it over. And Wade fortunately had some good ideas. And we're running on low battery power. What's going on?
The plug's shonky.
Dan can't stick a plug in properly, listeners. Oh, tough crowd. Hedra, anything?
Was that a sex joke?
No.
I'll show you my damn cock.
I wouldn't make a sex joke.
I could plug all sorts of things.
I'm a polite lady of politeness and lady-like. My mother would be very angry if you suggested that I was anything but a dignified
That's
lady
what she book. Said last
I
night.
I have no dignity.
Yeah.
I realize this. Listeners, I have no dignity. You can judge me as you will, for it is true. I fell down the stairs. I think that proves I have no dignity.
Yep, no, I agree with that.
World's biggest klutz, world's biggest fool.
So after Newsarama.
Yes, which was lots of fun. And Altogether Now, I should just mention that I didn't do Altogether Now. Alex, the director, did ask me, but I was doing Falafel at the time and just felt that was so busy and given the time constraints that I should not commit to a show that I may not be able to fully commit to. And I wasn't quite sure of the format and how it was going to work, and I knew that Melbourne had done it and Alex was bringing it up, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I really had a good time.
I laughed all the way through it.
Yeah.
We were there. We were the only core members who weren't in the show, I think, and we met outside, and then I went into
Greg
the theatre,
wasn't in either.
And then you slunk off upstairs and didn't come and sit with me.
Oh, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I always do that at the Arts Theatre, though. It's force of habit.
I sat by myself like a loser.
You're not a loser, Dan.
He is a
loser, actually.
You son of a bitch! Don't you whisper into my microphone. He's a loser. After May, we hit June.
Did we have a show in June?
I don't know whether we had a show, but we certainly kicked off another season of Prognosis Death around about that
time. Yes, that was early July.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm sure we had a show in June. We did. We'll be here forever if we sit here trying to... Just next to me on the bookshelf here in my study where we are recording this podcast, I have my pink folder full of shows and performances going back to when I was 13 years old. And I have not updated this since 2005, and it's missing so much impro stuff. And I really need to actually keep better track of what we're doing because...
Hedra implied to me that possibly there was an episode of Agatha Holmes around that time.
Oh, shit, yes.
And can I just say, fuck you, Dave, and your forgettable format.
Wow, I'll be in trouble now. I knew there was something. Agatha Holmes, excellent show, lots and lots of fun.
Very good. Very
good
stuff.
Yeah, great fun.
Very funny.
Really showed the benefit of having a set that suited a genre. Because we played inside the set for A Hero's Funeral, which was on at the Art Center at the time. And that set had been built to reflect a sort of mid-90s house. But with a few minor adjustments, i.e. taking down some of the pictures, it worked perfectly as a 1920s English, you know, manor house living room. And that's something just as I, you know, go forward into 2010 with our shows at the Art Theatre, I really am trying to get an idea of what sets we're likely to be dealing with to program in shows that will work well.
I've been very lucky this year in that I've been invited into a lot of shows. Like, I've been invited into, I've been involved in all but like three of the shows, and I saw two of the shows, and both of those shows, I laughed and I laughed and I laughed. That was Agatha Holmes and All Together Now. And it's a delight that I could be familiar with Impro for 12 years now, I think, and still go and watch a show and laugh and find it really engaging and really funny and really enjoyable to watch and go, yes, this is why Impro is valuable and why people should be coming to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
When I'm on stage, I just feel self-indulgent. But when in the audience, it's like, wow, this people in the audience are benefiting from this.
People become fans, and it's really... They say a lot in acting about being in the moment and having truthful reactions and all those sorts of things. But it's never going to be wholly there because you've got a script and you know what's coming. Mm. And the joy, the absolute unadulterated joy of Impro, I think for audiences as well as players, is that the audience know that everything is happening is fresh and isn't.
And
is,
because it's never going to happen again, it's special.
Yeah, and they've seen something unique. And most of all, when the players are surprised or shocked or say someone walks out as a gay minotaur and someone else looks completely stunned, that is the truthful reaction.
Yeah.
And that's not, I guess you could say it's not acting, but it is the most genuine reaction that an audience is going to absolutely gel onto because it's real. And the audience sees, oh my God, a gay minotaur, and they look at the person looking at the gay minotaur and go, that person is thinking exactly what I'm thinking, which is, holy shit, a gay minotaur. And that is just the greatness of doing long-form impro. Do I sound like I'm drunk? This is what I think drunk podcasting would sound like. Oh, my God, we're so great. I'm not trying to say that everything we do is gold.
I wish I'd had a drink in an hour and a half now.
When those moments, we should get someone to get you a drink. When we, no, Hedger, I'm just joking. God, I'm going to start being seen as some kind of ruthless dictator. Drinks! Get me drinks!
Where's the stage manager?
Yeah.
I'm the talent.
Yes, Dan's the talent, everyone. But it is the joy of Impro, those moments of the audience is finding out stuff as the actors and performers are finding out stuff. And that that's just not replaceable. That's gold. Moving on. Prog Death 2. Awesome.
Prog Death Relapse, yes.
Yeah. Which was characterized by a bit of, oh God, are we as funny, I think, for a couple of the shows.
There was an anxiety to it, like, oh, can we possibly meet the highs of the first season? And then we did, and it was such a relief.
Well, we had one show, the first show in our second week, which was St. Love Action Comics 1, which was an odd kind of format because we were doing a superhero sort of style story. So it was slightly odd. And it was also one of those unfortunate nights where just lots of things seemed to be against us. We had a lot of cast members sick. So we were quite, some of us were low energy. Mm-hmm. I remember I was on so many hot, cold and flu medications. Yeah. You know, you're not quite there. And I think it was a good enough show and it had some genius lines. It had the famous Luke Allen. I had some crab cakes for lunch. So it was, I think it was a strong enough show, but I think a few of us felt a bit like, oh, it's not, this, you know, we just haven't grabbed that rung of the ladder. And then for
me... Do you want to know how stressed I was? I was so anxious that I would get...
You took your pants off?
Sick. That I would get sick and not be able to be involved in the show or not do the best thing. I got a cold sore, hepatitis C, somewhere in my body.
Herpes. Herpes simplex.
Oh, yeah. Herpes simplex.
You know, hep C is a lot more serious. Yeah,
that's bad. Yeah. Herpes simplex.
Hep C means you've been, like, having sex with Pamela Anderson or something. Ouch. Wow. Nasty, Natalie.
Yes. So, I've possibly had the herpes simplex virus in my system for years and years and years, and it's spurred by stress. And I've been stressed, but the 4 days preceding Prognosis Death, Season 2, Episode 4, I was so anxious that I wouldn't be at full capacity for that my face literally revolted against me.
Your face is revolting still to this day.
That is a hurtful remark and a fairly weak pun, if I might.
Well, I specialise in weak puns, as I'm sure that people who regularly attend the speakeasy will attest to my fairly poor punning ability.
No one can summon a tumbleweed like Annette.
Yes. I am tumbleweed queen.
After Prognosis Death of Season 2, where did we go?
We went to Vietnam.
You went to Vietnam.
I went to Vietnam. Okay,
and we stayed home.
Now, you all came with me in my head. Seriously, because I was traveling through Cambodia after Vietnam, and we went to Siem Reap, where Angkor, which is the village near Angkor Wat, and I was like, God, the improvisers would just love it here, mainly because it was 50-cent draft beer, but also because of the atmosphere.
Too rich for my blood.
Yeah, the atmosphere, and I just thought this is just the best place for improvisers to hang out and just do shit. Anyway, so everyone came with me in my head.
But in real life, we stayed at home and we did Tales from the Wireless.
And I can't tell you how, oh, God, I was upset when I found out that's what was happening. Because here it is, a radio-themed show. Where have I spent my life working? In radio. And I didn't get to do the radio
show. We didn't want you to show
us
up, is what happened.
Oh, that's very kind of you, but I'm sure that's not true. No, I thought it was a great idea for a show. Kicked myself that I hadn't thought of it first. and moaned and complained to Greg while we were supposed to be enjoying our holiday going, they're going to be doing a great show about radio and I'm not involved.
It is a terrible thing that every improviser I know who goes on holiday will complain to their partner about what impro shows they're missing at home. And the thing is, like, vacations are great and traveling is great. But there is nothing as thrilling as getting up on stage with people you trust and doing amazing things in front of an audience.
Yes and no. Like, yeah, I mean, I can't really say that
you fucking naysayer.
No, I'm not naysaying.
You fucking are.
It's one of those
Step up and tell me you're naysaying and then tell me why.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, I was like, yeah, you're right. I should actually just be grateful that I'm seeing the sunrise over Angkor Wat. That's probably... You know, it's one of those, there'll be other impro shows.
That's
but at the same time...
a conciliatory gesture towards missing...
Yeah,
a show where we make stuff up on the spot.
I think when you're like me and you're a hopeless narcissist with...
She's staring at a reflection of herself in a pond as we speak.
Yeah, it's true. I'm about to drown myself in it. Well, for me, it's like, oh, God, I just, you know, the next opportunity to play good improv. And because we've had such a great run of shows at the Arts Theatre, who wouldn't want to be involved in them? I hope that shows that I'm not completely jaded by the fact that I still just want to do impro, you know. I'm not just like waiting for people to ring me and go, yeah, Nat, do you want to be in my show? I'm like, oh, God, I want to be in these shows and I'm not in them. And I hope that shows that that's what that is, not just neediness. Because you go, what else do I do? I don't have any other talents. All I can do is improvise. So I want to improvise.
Says a pro-am blogger, Bollywood
pro-am
dancer.
Blogger?
And
pro-am blogger?
And actress, Natalie Bahinsky.
Once I start making money from any of these ventures, then maybe, but...
That's when you hit pro, isn't it? Well, might I just point out, like, I always say this at the end of any episode that Natalie's in, is you can see Natalie's writing at girlclumsy.com.
You can.
Natalie has hundreds and hundreds of dedicated readers and a small but dedicated set of followers who constantly comment on her work, and she does wonderful writing.
Oh, that's
and
kind of you.
Any mention of her only having one talent is woefully misrepresented.
Oh, you're very kind. Yes, I wouldn't say that I have hundreds and hundreds of readers. That might be a bit stretching it a bit much.
Last time I checked your stats.
Let's check. Audience poll. Hedra, do you read my blog?
I keep forgetting that I do.
She keeps forgetting.
What the fuck is that?
I'm not, no, doll. It's all right. I thought that was hilarious. But yeah, I think that kind of puts point to the hundreds and hundreds of readers theory.
I checked your stats and you had 600 readers at that point. Unless you've lost
like,
500 readers.
But isn't that all up? Like ever at the blog?
No. That was 600 unique views.
But doesn't that mean like over the life of the blog?
No, not at
all. Hedra has a hand up. Question from the floor. She's also forgotten to read Dan's webcomic that you can see at www.invisiblespiders.com called Bubble Wrap.
Had a drop off in readership, but haven't been writing as many either. So I probably deserve that.
It's tough. I don't know. I was saying this before because...
I think you're getting into porn.
Nice. just getting into, not just, you know, not extending the porn. Okay.
Selling.
I was saying to some years ago, I came into some money and was been telling people that...
Assassination?
I got told at a work function where I was like... saying to the boss, can you rig it so I please win something at our annual work Christmas raffle? Because it's this running joke that I never win anything.
Yeah.
And everyone turned on me to go, you've had all your luck. You don't need to win anything ever again. And I said, you'd be surprised to find out that the gaining of something, in this case, money, does not necessarily mean that you never want any more of it. And I think that explains why capitalism works in the way that it does. People who go, oh, look, I've got money, tend to go, I'd actually like... more money.
Yeah.
So, well, you know what, saying this, you know, in relevance
sucks.
To?
I said, I've always said
readership.
And I said
if you go,
you,
I would like readers, and I would always like more readers. And I'm sure that someone who's got 1 million readers a day would be like, yeah, I could get 1.5 million a day. Just because you have X amount doesn't mean you wouldn't like X plus Y.
I said to you years ago, you're throwing your money away on scratchies. Like it's a mug's errand. It's a tax for the stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And you won a pleasant amount.
One. You're
and
not
then,
the only one.
Huh?
You were not the only one
who
told me that I was wasting my money, including me,
and
regularly.
The mathematical improbability of that happening was very upsetting to me on a logical level.
Was that the time where
no.
we weren't speaking?
That yes.
Yeah. So there were other reasons why it was upsetting.
It just added to the reasons. And then
that bitch who I'm not talking to. Yeah, she just wants some money.
Another
screw her.
Of our friends had another
one.
I had a win.
More.
Yeah, one of those 1 in a million type shenanigans. So two close friends have defied the mathematical odds to the extent where I sat there thinking, is there some sort of narrative element to the universe that's mocking me?
God hates you.
But you know what? I met a very pretty girl who was out here from France for a couple of months, and she had to go back to France, and she didn't want to because we were getting along really well. And so she went to the passport office and said, I would like to stay in Australia and extend my visa for another 3 months. And they said, well, you can't. And she said, but it says here that I can. And they said, well, okay, you can, but you need to have $5,000 in your bank account. And she did not have a lot of money, but just after she got to Australia, she flew down to Kangaroo Island and came back. And then Qantas contacted her a few weeks later and said, because you purchased that plane ticket, you went into the draw for a sum of money and you have won $5,000. So she had the exact amount of money in her bank account that she needed to stay that extra 3 months. And now we just celebrated our fourth wedding anniversary.
Aww.
So I didn't need a big win.
So maybe doesn't hate you after
it, all. Don't get me wrong. From a mathematical point of view, it upsets me no end.
But you won in life, you see?
Fuck that! The maths is wrong!
Yes, well, anyway.
So, the next exciting adventure was your baby, Jane Austen.
Yes, we had a gap after Tales from the Wireless. We didn't have a show in September because in August we did also the Kids Impro Schools tournament.
Yes.
Which had its final then in September. And we probably could have and should have done a show in September, but it was just the way it panned out that we didn't. And so there was quite a bit of excitement then for Jane Austen. I like to think that there was. I like to hope that the show was well received.
I loved it.
I certainly had a lot of show.
It was the scariest thing I did this year, I think.
And
was doing that Jane Austen, because you said you were doing it, and I was like, well, that's the show that I won't be in. That's a show that Nat will cast, and she'll cast get a small cast, and that's something that I have no ability to do, and she would be better off getting other people who knew what they were doing. And then you asked me to be involved, and I was like, really? You sure? And I immersed myself in the Jane Austen language and genre, and it was terrifying to do, but I really feel like I stepped up to it. And it was possibly one of the most satisfying experiences I had on stage that didn't involve me playing a mortician.
I'm pleased. That's really nice to hear. Well, it was, and I wanted it to be that for people. And I made the decision with the casting as well to bring in people who weren't or were not at that stage regulars in our long form or who maybe hadn't got an outing to because it was the kind of show that required a bigger cast, and I thought it was a great opportunity to include some of the people who hadn't really had a big hit out in our long form, and everyone just really stepped up to the plate. And it's was so nice to do a show where my mum was so genuinely excited after seeing it. Like, you know, and she's always very congratulatory. You know, she always likes what I do, and she really enjoyed the prognosis death. And I don't think I told them about Agatha Holmes. I think I forgot. But she would have enjoyed that too. But she really loved Jane Austen. And because she recognised the jokes, and she recognised the characters, and she recognised the tropes. And of course, we had such wonderful costuming.
Yeah. Oh my God, I felt like my costume was carrying me through the entire show.
Hey, you got a huge... I think you even outdid Wade in your... Because Wade, of course, played several female characters in the finest tradition of pantomime. He was dragged up. And he got a big laugh when he turned up. But when you turned up, I think you even outdid him, because you absolutely looked the part. And that was what was great about
it. Also, I did a nice little hero reveal turn, where I turned away from the audience when I came on stage. And then I turned towards the audience with a kind of a swish.
Yeah, nice.
I was pretty pleased with that.
Nice. Well, it was wonderful. And I mean, we had such a great cast. And Amy is just delightful as an Austen heroine. Alicia and Lauren as the other females. Alicia, just this put-upon best friend. Just so wonderfully, wonderfully. Oh, these great big
God,
puppy dog eyes.
Wonderfully, like,
Lauren is the bitchy rival. Luke Allen as the dashing, and
Liam
the dashing.
Did a beautiful job as the
Liam
father
as the father. Yeah, he was great with his dogs and the shitsation line. I think that was so funny about Jane Austen, because there's just these bizarre modern day kind of references in it.
And that's part of the joy of impro, is this sort of very staid genre, and it's the chaos of impro that really. It's one of those things that counterpoints the chaos of impro so effectively.
And people love that, because if they don't know the genre, then they're experiencing that sort of craziness.
Mm.
And if they know the genre, then they're going, wow, they're really hitting the tropes and subverting what is the normal way of things. And, of course, we had the wonderful inclusion of the go jump in a lake, Mr. Dashing.
Yes.
Go for a tour past the lake while you, you know, stop by the lake on your way. And Luke came on stage just positively dripping in a recreation of the famous Colin Firth jumping into the lake in Pride and Prejudice, the BBC version. And that was just, that just got a massive applause, because it was such a recognisable incident. And it was something that I wanted to do in the show. And I sort of said that if we can get that in, I'd like to. And so you might be accused of not improvising that.
It's not pure, Bohensky. It's not pure improv.
You want to entertain people, and you want to give them what they want or what they're expecting, and in a funny way. And so people might not be expecting, oh, Colin Firth in the lake, but when it happens, they go, of course, Colin Firth in the lake. We love that bit about Pride and Prejudice. I'm so glad you did that bit that was like Pride and Prejudice. And I don't think there's any harm in giving audiences what they want or what they expect or what they are going to get genuine joy out of, even if it means going, well, let's try and do this. I mean, it's the same with Prognosis Death and our continual cliffhangers. Because people, they don't want Mangold and Bublé to have a happy ending. They want there to be a tortured love relationship. Hedger is nodding.
Unresolved
sexual tension. What happened? We all know on Friends, when Ross and Rachel got together, everyone switched off.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, I don't know.
What about when Mulder and Scully did 69 on each other? After that,
what?
I was like turned off.
They 69'd each other?
Yeah, they didn't air it on Channel 10, but I got a copy. Funnily enough, David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson weren't available for that episode.
the truth is in here.
I want to believe. Yeah.
I want to be... No, I've got nothing.
I don't know. I want to be laid.
Yes.
All right. And then there was One Bride for Seven Brothers.
Yes.
The musical show.
Imprimatur's sort of first official musical.
And you know what? This might be a big call, but I think that impro musicals are not a solid format.
Wow. Controversial.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
3 a.m. controversy.
I've seen a number of impro musicals, and one thing I've noticed is that when someone does an impro song, it seems amazing. It's like a trick. It's a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat. But if you go to a magic show and the magician pulls a rabbit out of his hat six times, after the second time, it's pretty dull. And you're like, yes, I know you can do that trick. Well, I want to see you do a different trick. And so with most musicals, people just break into song and they do a standard song, and it it's just the same trick each time. One thing I did like about One Bride for Seven Brothers is that we had a couple of tricks. We had a couple of different types of song. So we knew enough to be able to do a sort of a rowdy song with seven people all singing the same sort of thing to sort of build to a climax. And then we practiced different different types of duets. And we knew that there were a bunch of different song tricks that we could hit in order to keep it fresh.
And I think that showed.
I'm glad about that. I feel that we didn't get through enough tricks. But then I have a very high opinion of what impro music could be.
Yeah.
And so I'm always trying to hit something that maybe is unattainable.
No, I don't think it's unattainable, but you probably, it's like anything we do, we need to practice. And this, as we say, was our first official musical. And so probably for next year's, it will just be one of those shows. Well, I'm speaking as I haven't even decided the schedule at this point for next year, but in terms of the musical is fairly certain to come back because there's been such a good reaction and such
That's
calls.
A very interesting point because we've gotten to the end of all of our shows that we've done this year.
Well,
we've
apart from Impro Unwrapped.
Impro Unwrapped tomorrow night.
Yes.
But as artistic director, it's your job to pour through the, 16 submissions?
Yeah, 15, 16, something
eight
like that.
Of them
About
to
that.
Perform next year?
Yeah. Actually, I think I have a couple less now, but I've still got more submissions than I have spots available for, and it's difficult.
That would be a heart-wrenching set of decisions to
it
make.
It is. It's difficult. But I take many things into consideration making these decisions, and not all of them. I mean, it's primarily about what's going to make a great show and what's going to be sellable, what are people going to like and want to come and see. What's the point of performing if you don't have an audience? I believe that so inherently, that if you're doing stuff that two people are turning up to, it doesn't make it not valid, but I don't know how you could continue to do that. I want to build audiences, maintain audiences at a good level and then build them for certain shows. Because I think that, above all, I just think this is a great company doing great shows and people need to see them. And our players should have great audiences for the stuff they're doing. So I don't think that might sound rather crass and commercial, but it's true. People should see our shows.
It's not as much fun playing in front of a big empty room.
And
I know.
Yeah, and I'm proud that we've got to this point where we can say, yeah, well, we had 90-odd people at One Bride for Seven Brothers. Prognosis Death had a couple of nights over 100. Damn, that's good. That's great. I'm really proud. And so I do consider that primarily, but I also consider, well, who's putting the idea in? What kind of direction do they want to take it in? What things do they want to do that are different to shows they've done before or other shows that we've done?
Mm-hmm.
How many submissions have they put in? How many have other people put in? How many slots have I got? How do you manage the politics of a company where people, you want to be fair, you want to give people a go, you want to encourage newer people who've maybe put a submission in to go through that and workshop that?
Yep.
It's a good learning experience. If we just keep giving the same people the chances, then we don't grow as a company.
Indeed.
So there's more than just, hey, here's my submission and it's gold. There's other factors that'll influence that. I mean, that's the primary one. Obviously, you've got to have a great hook to a show and a great idea. But there's a lot more. And so that's the hard part. The hard part is going, all of the submissions that I've got, look, to be honest, are all great. I could sell, I can see all of them attracting a great audience and selling. So it comes down to other factors. It comes down to, well, what's that person done? What's their level of commitment? Are they reliable? Have I encountered problems that, if not, maybe not rejected, but will that have to be managed? How expensive is the show going to be? What kind of costuming needs or set needs does it have? Is that achievable? Lots and lots of things that I think about while I'm going through these. And I had wanted to kind of maybe think about it and get it all sorted by the end of the year, but I'm not going to rush myself.
Plus, we've got a lot of stuff to think about. I mean, we've got a show tomorrow night.
Yeah.
We've got a New Year's Eve show at the Brisbane Arts Theatre.
Yeah.
And then Prognosis Death is like 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, we'll probably have it. I dare say we won't be doing a show in February, and that will allow me to tie everything down. I hope to have it done before then. I hope to have it done before Prognosis Death. Maybe a bit over sort of Christmas. I'm working. I don't have any real time off, but I'm going to give it a think and use this the last bit of this month to think about
it. And finally, when it finally comes out of it, you just put all of the shows on a dartboard and then blindfold yourself and then fuck.
Yeah. Well, fuck. It might come down to that. It might come down to I've got two very equally deserving submissions.
Because your problem is you never know what the finished product is going to be like based on the on the submission.
And or the thing
I mean,
is
you can have an idea about how much effort people have put into thinking about it, but then you can overthink it and then
There's a few shows that have been like resubmitted, ones from this year that have been successful, that have been resubmitted.
Yep.
Not a huge amount. And we've obviously got Prognosis, Death and Agatha Holmes coming back. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether, well, do I
That's
go with
true.
Ones that have
and
come
That's true. And we should probably point out
and...
to the listening audience that Prognosis, Death will return on the 21st of February.
21st, 22nd, 23rd,
the
and
last
29th,
the last,
and 30th.
Last
2 weeks.
Saturday of January.
Last 2 weeks of January, Thursday, Friday,
fast,
Saturday.
Make sure you get a season ticket so you don't miss any of the episodes.
Yeah.
Because
and we're
going
to make
killer.
It. We're going to. I'm chatting to the theatre, but hopefully soon we'll be able to list it online so people can actually pre-purchase their tickets. And that's
nice.
That'll help give us an idea of how many people are booking in, hopefully, and we can start going, hey, selling out fast.
Yeah.
We can say that anyway, I guess. I mean, it's got a good reputation. I've actually had a request from one of the ladies at the theatre who just loves the show.
Yep.
Comes every night with her 10-year-old son, 12-year-old son, and they both love it. And she said, you have to film the first two episodes because I'm away and I'm going to miss them and I have to know what happens. Because we left season two with another cliffhanger, which was finally the wedding of Buble and Mangold, interrupted by
the real
Burton apparently Burton Mangold coming on and stopping the wedding. So another cliffhanger there. And so she said, I have to know what happens. I have to know what happens after the wedding. So
yeah, I'm quite looking forward to finding out what happens.
We don't know what's
going to
happen yet either. So
it's amazing that it's so transient. We have no idea what's going to happen right up until the night where it actually... And when it happens, the audience finds out at the same time we do.
Yeah.
And then it becomes canon. Then it's locked in.
It's done.
It's bizarre.
Isn't that wonderful, though?
It's amazing.
I love it.
It's like a hose when you turn a hose on full pelt and the water makes it flick all over the place.
Yeah.
And you get your hand and you grab the hose and you walk your hand up the hose until it gets the nozzle, and that's when it's solid and powerful and doing what it's supposed to do.
And yet people's deaths not locked in. very flexible.
Yes, it's not a perfect
metaphor. Did you
hear
that? They're just saying they stabbed it with their steely knives, so you just can't kill the beast. I just said that at the start of the podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry, synchronicity. There you go.
Yes, I like it.
That's my favourite line from Hotel California. They stabbed it with their steely knives, but they just couldn't kill the beast. I don't know what it means.
I like my favourite bit from Hotel California is a bit where it goes, I see a little silhouetto of a man.
The Muppets bit? The Muppets bit?
Yeah.
Is that when the Muppets sing? I haven't actually seen that YouTube clip. Apparently I'm the only person in the world who hasn't seen the Muppets doing Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, see, now I'm kind of holding out because so many people have been like, have you seen it? Oh my God, have you seen
arrogant,
it?
I'm like, elitist.
I'll get around to it one day. I don't know if I have that 3 minutes. I've got Facebook to check.
I think it's important that I say to you, Natalie Bohensky.
Yes.
And time. You have been listening to Greg Robotham, who has a secret blog.
Some kind of compliment then. I was getting all excited.
I did give you a compliment. The perfect wind-up. You have also been listening to Natalie Bohensky. You can check out her amazing blog that is followed by hundreds of readers at girlclumsy.com. You can also check out my wonderful webcomic, which is followed by almost 100 readers at invisiblespiders.com. Thank you for David Peachy for our theme music. Hosting for End Time is powerfully provided by CivicNet Web Design.
Woohoo!
See, I was wondering why my waveform wasn't working. I wasn't saying anything.
That could be it.
Silly Dan.
Yeah, we're filming a podcast. That's meta.
We should call it a podcast.
Yeah, it's a vodcast.
That makes no sense. You're a bad thinker. Stop thinking bad.
You'll have to...
Oh, look, we're all cocks.
Oh, yes.
I don't understand how you've managed to leave yourself out of it.
No, I was pretty good.
Ha-ha!
I got dragged into cockness. I had cockness thrust upon me, if you pardon me. If you pardon the expression.
Oh, my God.